Non-Monogamy Help is a podcast where your questions about open, non-monogamous or polyamorous relationships are answered. Our host, Lola Phoenix, will consult a licensed therapist with over a decade of experience to address your problems. Names and locations have been changed or censored to keep your questions anonymous. You're listening to Non-Monogamy Help, the podcast.
And welcome to episode 115 of the Non-Monogamy Help podcast. I'm Lola Phoenix. Please send your questions to ask@nonmonogamyhelp.com, and they'll either be in the podcast or the column anonymously. If you want to read the columns and listen to all the podcasts, you can do so at nonmonogamyhelp.com. Subscribe to the email newsletter by going to go.nonmonogamyhelp.com/email and follow the column on Twitter and Instagram at nonmonogamyhelp. If you want to support the columns and the podcast, please consider becoming a patron. It really helps me, and even like the smallest tier just supports the daily running of the columns and the podcasts, and it's just nice to have that general vote of support. You can do that by going to patreon.com/LolaPhoenix, and if you donate $5 or more a month, or if you select the right tier — I need to fix that because I don't think it's exactly $5 anymore thanks to currency conversion, but anyway, if you do so, then your name, with your permission, will be read at the end of the podcast, if you so choose. Let's get to this week's discussion question. If this is the first episode, every week I put forth a discussion question you can use with your friends, partners, or anyone else to get to know them a little bit more. I also answer it myself briefly to give you a little bit of context. This week's discussion question is, can you think of a need you have that applies to all relationships? And I think this is a really interesting question because quite often I will say to people, like, take the situation that you have with a partner that you're unhappy about and ask yourself if it would be similar if you had a friend and there were kind of a similar type of situation. I'm not really describing it very well right now, but sometimes it helps put it into context because there are things that we wouldn't like. Say, for example, answering your mobile while on a date. Like, there are people who, you know, wouldn't mind so much, even if it was a romantic partner. There are people who, in general, even if they're with friends, would find that really rude. And it's not like there's one right answer to that situation. But sometimes putting it into context about whether or not that you would be bothered if a friend did it can kind of signal to you, okay, is this about a fear of losing that partner, or is this about, like, just in general, I find it rude if people answer their phone while they're supposed to be spending intentional time with me. So sometimes thinking about that within regards to all relationships can be super helpful. So I think when it comes to, like, a need that I have that applies in all relationships, I think that the feeling of reciprocity is really important for me. So if I feel like I'm putting all the effort in to the relationship, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's family, I am not going to be the one that puts all the effort in, because I've had so many relationships, family, friends, and romantic relationships, where I felt like I'm putting in way too much effort. And it's something that I actually have to really monitor with myself, because I'm so used to that dynamic that I often don't realize when it's happening until it's too late. So yeah, let me repeat the discussion question. Can you think of a need you have that applies to all relationships? Let's get to this week's letter. So this week's letter actually is a question that I was asked on Instagram, and it says, would it be discriminatory or unethical if one of your needs is that the other person feels compersion, as in totally accepting people who don't have it as a valid polyamorous people, but not being particularly comfortable dating them and thus choosing not to? Before we get to this week's answer, I want to quickly remind you of this episode's sponsor, BetterHelp. Quite often, I encourage people to seek a polyamory-friendly therapist, and for a lot of people looking locally for a therapist who may be understanding of polyamory or know something about it, can be impossible or out of their budget. BetterHelp allows you to find therapists online. You can send messages to at any time of the day. You can switch therapists if you don't like that one. So it's a really great way of finding a compatible therapist. And they do offer some financial aid. You can get 10% off your first month by using the promo code nonmonogamyhelp at checkout or going to betterhelp.com/nonmonogamyhelp. Let's get to this week's answer. So first, to define, in case people who are listening to this don't know what compersion is a concept that I'm not sure who was the original attributor of it. I think I have it in my book as a definition, but I can't remember it off the top of my head now. But basically, compersion is supposed to be the quote-unquote opposite of jealousy. It is where your partner, when your partner is with somebody, or you hear that they're with somebody, or you hear they're having kind of success on a date or whatnot, you feel happy for them instead of feeling unhappy for them. And I talk a lot about compersion because I feel like there is this expectation that you should feel compersion, and that even though people say there's no one right way to do polyamory, there is this sort of subtle hint within the definition of compersion, which I'm not saying that the person who invented it meant, but I feel like there's just this kind of subtle hierarchy implied, right? Like that the ideal is for you to feel overjoyed and happy when your partner's with someone else. And not only do I think it's unrealistic to expect this of everyone, because people are going to feel scared, and this is quite normal, especially when you grow up in a monocentric society that tells you that monogamy is kind of the only choice, that open relationships don't work. It's very understandable for you to feel a lot of anxiety and fear when your partner does finally, you know, especially if you began as a monogamous person in a monogamous relationship and you open up, it's very understandable for you to have that fear. And I think putting the added pressure on that to feel compersion makes the situation a lot worse. But I also think that some people just don't feel it. Like I, in my experience, it's not necessarily that I felt jealous, but I didn't have any feelings. And I felt like, again, this is a great situation to compare to friendships. There are people who want to hear all the details of their friends' sort of dating lives. There are people who feel extreme amounts of joy when their friend, you know, finds a new date or has a great date. And like, there are some people who feel like, oh, that's good, that's nice to hear, but you don't necessarily feel any strong, compelling emotion either way, or you just feel quite neutral about it. Like, you know, yeah, obviously glad to hear that your friend's having a good time, but it's not like you're overflowing with joy. You're just like, yeah, it's nice, nice to hear. In the same way that if your friend said they had an awesome sandwich, you'd be like, yeah, that's nice to hear. Like, you don't have any strong emotions either way. And so I do feel like the expectation that you should feel compersion and that it should be this like, oh my God, I'm so happy for you, I feel like that often sets up people who just don't feel very strongly either way to feel like there's something wrong with them, to feel like they are jealous if they don't feel compersion. So I have a lot to say about compersion. And I have a lot of, I personally try very hard to normalize not only not feeling compersion, but having no feeling whatsoever, and that being fine, and that being okay, and that not being a sign that you're secretly not polyamorous or a sign that you're secretly jealous. Sometimes you just don't have any strong feelings either way, and that's absolutely okay. I think when it comes to this question, I think that first of all, I wouldn't worry right off the bat about like discriminatory or unethical, because, and it's not to say that people can be discriminatory or unethical. I just feel like putting that in a way, like the same way that I feel like compersion adds a layer of added unnecessary difficulty to the equation, I think that trying to create the scenario where it's about being a good person creates an added unnecessary level of difficulty to the situation that doesn't need to be added. I think the first thing that you should do is really explore the reasoning behind this need. So why do you have this need? What is that about? Is this about a secret type of reassurance? Because part of me wonders if like wanting so badly to have a partner to feel compersion and choosing not to date people who admit that they don't feel compersion, or maybe don't feel it or don't show it to you, is this actually about a need that you have when it comes to, you know, it's because I think a need is sometimes like wanting someone to communicate clearly, or my need for reciprocity. This isn't about fear. This isn't about trying to avoid something. This is about, I need for there to be reciprocity because that's what I want in a relationship. This is an active choice, which is about the desire to have something. And my worry is that this is less of a need and more of a rule, and it's made out of a desire to avoid something. And I think that the desire here is that when you date somebody who has compersion, there's a back sort of log in your mind that's saying that, oh, they feel compersion. They are a safer partner. They are less likely to leave me. They are less likely to cause trouble. They are less likely to have bad reactions, right? And I feel like this isn't really about seeking relationships that you want. This isn't really about going for connections that are strong. This isn't about somebody's communication style. This isn't about somebody's willingness to support you, because someone can feel an extreme amount of upset, anxiety, jealousy, all of these things and still be very willing to support you and still be very willing to give you assurance. So the idea that somebody feeling compersion is, I feel like the idea hiding behind this need is that people who feel compersion are safer, because in the end, this is about avoiding pain. This is about, I don't want to end up in a situation where I'm hurt. Maybe there's a bit of avoidance as well of trying not to be in difficult situations, which is somewhat understandable, but there's an element here of kind of self-protection and therefore almost self-sabotage, because you're like, well, I don't want to be in situations where I might have to deal with someone's tricky emotions. So I'd much rather be in situations that are easier for me and they're just happy for me to be with other people. So it's not really about seeking out a relationship that actually is fulfilling to you. It's about avoiding situations that you think are going to cause trouble for you. And to a certain extent, I understand it. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. But actually, when it comes down to it, if you decide to make this decision, what you're really doing is preventing yourself from connections that are actually really valuable and are actually really wonderful. Because if we think about it, a lot of people are going about relationships in a way that is about avoiding pain rather than about increasing connection with somebody. Like sometimes people choose polyamory because they don't want to break up with somebody. Sometimes people end up in situations that they're not in because they don't like because they're not willing to admit their own, you know, their own needs. And I think that when you kind of do that, it seems like you're doing it for the sake of the other person, but actually it's self-limiting, it's self-sabotage, it's you stifling your own wants and needs, you stifling things in order to protect yourself. And the more you protect yourself sometimes, and the less risk that you're willing to take, even though that seems safer, it's not actually safer. So I feel like, you know, maybe consider you're limiting yourself because of your own fears. And the irony here for me is that, you know, people want to avoid, people will be in polyamory and sort of say, well, the monogamous kind of expectations that society pushes, which not all monogamous people necessarily agree with, but this idea, for example, that a relationship is only successful if somebody in that relationship doesn't make it out alive. As Dan Savage says, which I really agree with, like that concept should be the thing that, if anything, like from a lot of like monocentric ideas that you want to fight against, right? This idea that a relationship is only successful if it lasts for a very long time. A relationship is only worthy if it lasts for a very long time. Understandably, a lot of us want to have relationships that last for a long time. And we're not necessarily wanting to have short-term relationships. But at the same time, I do think that this concept is actually one of the things that makes it so hard for people to break up. It's one of the things that creates so much shame around breaking up. It's one of the things that creates so much shame around divorce, around all this types of stuff. And I don't actually agree with creating that shame. I think that relationships can last for 2 weeks and still be incredibly important relationships. You can still get things out of relationships just because they didn't last until you or your partner died. Doesn't mean that that relationship isn't important and doesn't mean that it wasn't quote unquote worth it. So I really feel like people carry that into polyamory all the time. People carry that judgment, ironically, if someone isn't with a polyamorous partner for a long time, or, you know, and I don't think they're intending to be judgmental, but there is this sort of concept within that I feel like is lying behind this need, that is that ideally, you want to be with someone for a very long time. Ideally, you don't want to have any conflict. Ideally, you want to have this sort of somewhat unrealistic perspective on how a relationship should be. And it's created out of like fear of loss, which is understandable. But actually, you can have connections with people who maybe have intense feelings about you being with other people that are still stable, that are still very good for you. So maybe you making this rule out of fear, not really out of what you desire, because I don't, again, like I kind of would disagree that this is a need. I feel like this is a rule which you're making out of fear. And I think you should consider whether or not that's actually limiting yourself, because it won't save you. Like monogamy, the rule of monogamy, like only dating people who want to only be with one person, doesn't prevent monogamous people from being broken up with, doesn't prevent people from falling out of love with their monogamous partners and falling in love with someone else. It doesn't prevent people from losing their partners to natural disasters, to diseases, to anything else. Like none of that those rulemakings prevents anything from happening. Like, is this rule actually going to prevent that? This rule isn't going to prevent you from ending up in a situation with someone who is maybe more unstable. Just because they feel compersion doesn't mean that they are a stable person, if that's what you're worried about. Just because they feel compersion doesn't mean that they're more trustworthy. Just because they feel compersion doesn't mean that they aren't going to experience jealousy. So this isn't really about a need. This is about trying to prevent loss. And this is also not going to prevent that loss. Because at the end of the day, you could meet someone who is super, like, feels so much compersion, never feels any jealousy, and they could still fall out of love with you. They could still end up breaking up with you. They could still end up betraying you. None of that is going to prevent those things from happening. And rather than sitting and trying to control these situations, it actually is much better if you accept the fact. And I've talked a little bit about this in my 101 article, which you can find at nonmonogamyhelp.com/101, and in my 102 article, which you can find same place, nonmonogamyhelp.com/102, and in my book, The Anxious Person's Guide to Non-Monogamy, I talk a little bit about, like, the need to let go of this, because sometimes a lot of the rules we create and a lot of the things we want in relationships come from a desire to control all the aspects of that, and from a desire to want to prevent something from happening. And quite often, and I'm not saying all rules are always bad, and I really hate it when people are like, rules are bad, always evil, manipulative, bad, blah. No, I think different situations call for different types of agreements. But I think that you need to ask yourself if any rule you put forward is actually going to prevent the thing it's designed to prevent. For example, a lot of people, when they open their relationships, make the rule that, you know, they won't fall in love with anyone but their partner. But they can't actually prevent that. They can't actually control that. And the rule is not going to suddenly control that. Just like the rule of two people who agree to be monogamous together doesn't prevent them from falling out of love with their partner or falling in love with anyone else. So yeah, I would say that examining the reasoning behind this need, is it a need or is it actually a rule that you're putting forward designed to protect yourself from something that it can't protect you from? And is it actually limiting you in terms of your partner choice because you're making massive assumptions about what compersion means about someone's general emotional state or their general ability to navigate polyamory? And can you open your mind a little bit? It's less about, like, again, I wouldn't worry about, like, the discriminatory and unethical things. Not because, again, like, I'm not saying you can't be discriminatory or unethical. Everyone can. And a lot of people do make unethical choices. However, I feel like adding the morality aspect on top of it is overcomplicating the situation more than it needs to be. I feel like we have certain needs and certain attractions and certain interests. And I do feel like we should unpack those. But I don't feel like creating a scenario where someone is unethical and creating that judgmental, puritanical, intense type of culture around this, I don't think actually leads people to making more ethical decisions. I actually think it makes people more anxious about the decisions they make in an unnecessary way. So yeah, unpack some of your needs and look at this, but don't beat yourself over the head with a moral club for it, because that isn't going to lead you to any better place, in my opinion. Like, if beating people over the head with moral judgment and, you know, all of that really worked, then there are a lot of societies where people are intensely judgmental about morals and ethics that don't really tend to have positive solutions, right? Like, growing up coming from the South, at least I know very much in states where they, like, don't have sex education because they think it's immoral, they have higher rates of teenage pregnancy. So let's just really think about, and I know that sometimes when we're applying our own lens about discrimination and you know, things being ethical and not, we tend to kind of forget that one can be quite fundamentalist and quite intense and think that you know the right thing and think that, oh, I'm not the same because I'm not like those religious nuts. But actually, if you approach things in such a type of basically fundamentalist way, you are also a fundamentalist. So maybe let's not have this kind of intense moral judgment when you're trying to just unpack things with yourself. Be kind to yourself and don't add a layer of unnecessary judgment on top of the situation, which isn't going to lead you into any better of a solution. Okay. So yeah, that was why I wanted to record this question instead of answering it on Instagram, because not only do I find Instagram impossible to type on without accidentally hitting enter in the middle of one of my paragraphs, please fix your stupid UI, Instagram, but also this is a complicated answer for a complicated question, so I wanted to do it on the podcast. So yeah, I hope that helps, and good luck. Thank you for listening to episode 115 of the Non-Monogamy Health Podcast. If you want to be awesome, you can donate to my Patreon. There are quite a lot of people who listen, and I don't mean to shove it in everyone's face. I know cost of living stuff, et cetera, and so forth. If you can't genuinely become a patron, then that's absolutely fine. But there are very low tiers of support. And honestly, it does really, really help. Like if people come together, then this would be something that would actually be a good source of income for me. So it's something that I just want to encourage out there, because if you do have even the cost of a cup of coffee a month, that is really, really helpful to keeping this podcast going and keeping things going, helping me with the cost of hosts and all of the other things that cost money for running this type of podcast. So yeah, and eventually I'd really love to be able to hire an editor, because it's kind of a pain in the ass for me to do all the editing myself. And one of the reasons why I don't do interviews on the podcast is because I really don't want to be editing that. So yeah, if you would like to become a patron, I'd really appreciate it. This week's current patrons who get a podcast shout out are Laura Boylan, Chris Albury Jones, Duke, Nikki Jones, James Wartell, and Justin Calm. If for whatever reason you can't, I totally understand. That's fine. One thing you can also do is take 5 minutes to log into iTunes or Spotify, find the podcast, rate, and review it. That would be really helpful. It just helps me get the podcast out there to new people. And it takes you 2 seconds. If you don't want to write a review and just do a rating, that's absolutely fine. Unless you want to give me a 1-star rating, in which case, then don't. That's all for this week. You'll get a new column next Friday and another podcast episode in a fortnight. Thank you again for listening. You've been listening to Non-Monogamy Help. The podcast music was done by Chris Albury Jones at albury-jones.com. Our podcast art was done by Dom Young, and you can visit Dom's site at domdoong.com. Thank you again for listening.